Prophecies, your week in gaming, episode 38, recorded for the 12th of April, 2024, to bring you all the latest news from the world of gaming. On today's episode of the podcast, we talk Magic the Gathering, Overwatch 2, the III Initiative, and a browser RAM limiter slider. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 38 of your week in gaming. It is Friday, the 12th of April. We promised you that the episode would be out on Friday, and we stuck to that promise. We have delayed recording for some news that we're going to get into a little bit later, but a person that can back up my promise, Samantha, is with me today.
Hey!
I am back, as per usual. Nothing new or exciting there, folks.
I must say, recording on Saturdays is very weird. I don't know if I like it. I prefer the midweek recording, to be honest.
I actually preferred the Saturday recording. I felt far less rushed, confused, stressed out. Oh, I got work today. Oh, I got to do with this today. Nah, fam, it's a Saturday. Chilling.
We'll see. I suppose it must be nice for you, like your work, if you have on work on Saturdays. It's either you've finished very early in the morning or it's much later on in the evening. Kind of thing. So Saturdays are a lot more chilled for you, I think.
I almost never have work on a Saturday, but tonight I'm gonna be working until like 6 a.m. again because, you know, we ball.
Nice. It sounds great, and it's great timing. There's a lot of esports happening at the moment. It's just like a lot of sports stuff in general, whether it's esports. There's a lot of gaming things happening at the moment. Seems like a busy part of the year as, you know, people gear up for summer, the Northern Hemisphere at least. We can start feeling that it's getting closer to like autumn and winter here in the Southern Hemisphere, as it's been very cold in the mornings, like very cold.
I'm currently in a fleece hoodie and I'm under a blankie, but it's because my office doesn't get any sunlight. Like parts of the house were like closed off because it belongs to my brother and the flat is attached to the house. And so certain things were like closed off and partitioned off. And anyway, long story short, my office doesn't have windows, so it doesn't get sunlight. So it is just permanently. And the thing is, outside the sliding door, there is a roof, like a
little ducky.
Yeah, like a little off duck.
I know what
you, yeah, I know yeah, what yeah. you mean. So the sun can't even get in through the sliding door. So I'm just perpetually cold, which is great in the summer, but I'm going to off in winter. There's a word there that I wasn't going to say. I had to stop myself.
Yeah. Winter, ladies and gentlemen, Sam is going to suffer during that time. It's going to be cold. Sucks to be you. But let's just get on to some gaming news before we start continuing talking about the weather. Gosh, we're getting old.
Truly.
Gaming news now. And for those who love Magic the Gathering and receive their updates via Carrier Pigeon, the new set, Outlaws of Thunder Junction, is releasing next week. And it is loaded with some really awesome cards. The set releases in the digital card version Magic the Gathering Arena on the 16th of April, but card packs and decks will only be available on April 19th. This is the actual physical cards. The set is releasing with 4 commander decks, collector boosters, as well as normal play boosters. With this expansion comes 6 new mechanics as well. Crime, Spree, Plot, Mount/Saddle, Outlaw, and Bounty. This new set is based on a fantasy, like Wild West theme, and it's filled with some really awesome cards, which may bring back some more flashbacks to a worse time with cards like Oko making a reappearance, you know, modified from his previous very broken version. But there's quite a buzz around it and the cards within it. For all of you that want to learn how to play Magic the Gathering, a release of a new set at your local game shop is an incredibly great way to learn. Many game shops will have sealed tournaments. Essentially, is you will get a little box with, I think it's about 5 or 6 booster packs in them. From this, you would need to build a 40-card deck. And then play against other people. It's a ton of fun, and I really recommend it. If you want to find out more about these things, just reach out to your local game shop. They can give you so many more details. And the community is actually very welcoming to people that want to learn to play Magic the Gathering. So Google online, like Google, you know, magic shops near me, whatever the case is, and you'll find a lot. I know up here in Johannesburg, there is like hundreds. There's so many all over the show, and all of them are having events for the the sealed events for the new set. So go check it out. If you play Magic the Gathering Arena, it'll be releasing on April 16th. So go and check it all out.
Don't do it. It's a trap. Purely because, have you seen the price of Magic cards? And the problem with Magic is that it's addictive. So you are just like, for the rest of your life, spending ungodly amounts of money on pieces of cardboard. And don't get me wrong, I love Magic. I have a whole ass box full of cards that I never play with, and they just kind of sit there because they're pretty and I love them. But, oh boy, if you want a money sink and a half, get into Magic the Gathering. That being said, the new set does sound quite cool, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, there's a lot of really cool cards. I've already been doing some looking at me like, oh, you know, playing some drafts and things like this will be really nice. The sealed events, the commander decks look like a lot of fun as well. Sam says, as you know, as she said, yeah, it can get expensive. But at the same time, what hobbies aren't? Whether it is outdoor True. Hobbies like golf and things like that, very expensive. Some people like to, we're not going to get into that, all right? I mean, people that like to build cars and things like that can get very expensive. People that like painting and everything, all of this stuff costs money. It's just some hold their value more than others. Plus, the problem with Magic the Gathering is that once you start going down the rabbit hole of the cards and like the different formats, whether it is Pauper, or you play maybe standard, or maybe you want to get into modern or historic, any of those kind of formats, yes, then the game can get very expensive. But again, if you open up a really nice card, you look after them, they're like just like any other collectible. They will hold their value, and somewhere along the line, you'll have somebody purchase a Black Lotus for millions and millions of dollars, as we had covered previously. Jeez, but yeah, It's a great time to learn. Go and have a chat to some people. I've met a lot of really nice friends through playing Magic the Gathering. We still, you know, play today. I play more digital than the actual cardboard. But I've already started looking at some of the commander decks to be like, maybe I should play some commander in real life.
Yeah, I think the big thing with Magic is obviously like because they rotate stuff out, like things will be taken out of standard and so you can't actually play them in certain tournaments or whatever, which is not everybody's thing, but a lot of people will be like, you know, you might go play casually and someone will be like, oh well, that's not in standard, so you can't play that. So sometimes like the cards that you get, you don't really have the opportunity to play them for very long. But yeah, as I say, that's more of like a competitive thing. I think most of your standard home things, you'll see cards that like, so there's a card. It is one of my favorite cards in the entire game because it is so incredibly stupid. And I think it was banned in a lot of tournaments, and I'm pretty sure it's out of standard as well, but I love it. And so because I don't actually compete, I can just keep trying to play it, even though it is almost impossible to play, but it's called Door to Nothingness. And it is literally, you pay two of every mana. And I kid you not, the text on the card says, target player loses the game.
Yep.
I love that card. And I've never been able to play it because it's so difficult to get out.
Yeah. There's some formats that, cards like that will not be allowed because of how easy it can be to actually play those kind of things. But at least what Wizards of the Coast have done with the rulings is standard. If, you know, sometimes people are worried that, you know, people like playing standard and the cards go out of rotation, you know, fairly quickly. Fortunately, they have changed the rule. They have extended the lockout for standard. So cards like this pack, it's going to be around for, I think it is 3 years that you'll be able to play it. So it's at least a nice lengthy investment. So if you're interested, go and chat to your local game store and go and support them.
So Overwatch 2 is taking strides in the right direction. We had mentioned some changes that Overwatch were making some time ago on the podcast. And Overwatch 2 has been very tumultuous. Like, they'll come up with some really great stuff, and then they'll come up with some really weird, dumb stuff, and then they'll come up with some great stuff again. And so we go back and forth, up and down, wibbly wobbly, and they never seem to kind of settle into a, is this good or is this bad as a game? But I do love some of the new changes that they're bringing out here. So they're bringing out something called a wide group for competitive play, which is essentially like a separate queue, which will allow you to queue with other people of any rank. and not as a five stack or necessarily, like you could queue with someone with one other person way higher rank than you. And it's fine. It'll work because you are queuing in the wide group. And then look, they do specify that it might take a little bit longer for you to actually find games because they need to find another wide group with a similar skill disparity. But whatever, you know what, if you want to do that, you can do that. And I think that part of this is to try and discourage smurfs. Because, I mean, I remember for myself, when I used to play a lot of Overwatch, I'd have friends who were way higher ranked than I was, and I wanted to just play games with them. But we couldn't queue together because they were all so much higher ranked than I was. So they would end up on a smurf, and then all hell breaks loose. So I think that this is part of what that's about, and I think that's quite cool. And they also say that a solo queuer will never end up in a wide group, which I love as well. Look, you know what? That being said, when it finally releases, you're going to hear stories, all right? Stuff's going to come out on social media about how somebody wound up in like this crazy group. And sometimes these things do happen, buggy things happen, but it's not intended for you to ever end up in a wide group. So I quite like that. And then additionally, they have seriously cracked down on their lever penalties. So a lot of people will like dodge games or whatever based on who's on the enemy team, what map they get, if somebody picked their, you know, hero or whatever the case is. So they end up just Alt-F-ing and then they come back. And now they have really, really cracked down on it. So they've said that from now on, if you leave two games out of the last 20, you get a 5-minute suspension. Not too bad. If you leave 10 games in the last 20, you get a 48-hour suspension. Okay. That's for like normal unranked games. For competitive games, on the other hand, where you completely obliterate and ruin people's MMR, if you leave 10 matches at any point during the competitive season, you will get a ban for the remainder of the season. You will not be able to queue comp. And I love that. Get out. It's like that nonsense of like just leaving, oh, game's over, I'm just going to leave, and then you ruin everything for everybody else. No. We are not about that. So I love that change. And finally, the last really cool change that I feel like Overwatch should have had for ages, and I can't believe they haven't had it up until now, but they're going to have an upgraded streamer protection. And this is something that I know Valorant does. This is something that a lot of games do. They basically give you like a randomly generated name. In Valorant, they just give you the name of your agent. But in Overwatch, they're going to give you the name, like a randomly generated name, so that people on the other team and people on your team don't know who you are. Unless they like omega recognize your voice, they won't know who the hell you are. And then at the end of the game in the scoreboard, it'll say, this is who you are playing with. But this is to stop people from going, I know that guy, he's streaming, I'm going to go watch his stream, and then I can like stream snipe. So I love these changes. I think they're fantastic. And you know what? Good on Blizzard. These are some really good, you know, steps in the right direction.
Wow. Blizzard doing a lot of good things recently. I mean, there's still news more that we're going to have about them. But I like a lot of those changes. It's definitely going to crack down on people leaving. Casual games, I mean, it hurts people's fun more than anything else. The competitive one, though, the leaving the 10 games for the entire season, I think that this it's very good, but I also see a potential bad side to it as well. Because now what people are going to do is, instead of just like leaving the game, they're just going to not leave the game and either continue to throw, or they're just going to, you know, sit in spawn or whatever the case is. So I think that It's a very difficult line that Blizzard are trying to walk. They're trying to crack down on people ruining the game for other people, which I 100% agree. You know, if you're messing around with other people's fun, you know, that's not cool in any shape, way, or form, and you should be punished for it. But I think that people are going to just find other ways around it. But hopefully Blizzard can somehow find a middle ground with all of this and find a way to make, you know, let people enjoy playing competitive and not just being like, oh, I'm going to end up with people that are just going to leave the game or whatever the case is.
Yeah, bearing in mind that like sitting in spawn, trolling, throwing yourself off the map, whatever, all of that stuff, they are reportable offenses. So, you know, you get enough reports and then Blizzard can action that. You don't really report people for leaving. I mean, some people report people for leaving the game, but like Blizzard knew you did that. So like reporting that is pointless. So yeah, I think that this is just another way to try to get some sort of a control how trolly and out of control the competitive scene is in Overwatch. So I think it's a good change, as I said, step in the right direction, and hopefully we'll see things start to improve from there. I don't know, maybe it's like a recent or like a false syllogism of some description, but it really does feel like since Microsoft took over and Kotick was kicked, we're starting to see some good stuff happening. Is there a correlation? I don't know, but it's certainly a thing that's happening.
It really is. So, you know what? Good on Blizzard. And, you know, whilst we're talking about Blizzard, I think we may as well just jump into the next one. After a year of being away from the Chinese market, Blizzard and NetEase have teamed up once again. After failed negotiations in 2022, which led to the termination of the agreement with Blizzard back then, Chinese players will be able to access Hearthstone, World of Warcraft, as well as other Blizzard games that they haven't had access to, thanks to the new rebrokered deal with the assistance of Microsoft. This new agreement between the three parties, Microsoft, Blizzard, as well as NetEase, games will be returning sequentially to mainland China from the summer of 2024. So roughly 2 to 3 months. We don't actually have a concrete date yet, but they are very optimistic that games are going to be returning as soon as summer. Players seem to be very happy about this. And I've also noted that a new statue of Gorehowl will be created to commemorate Blizzard's return. This is something that NetEase have said after the previous orc statue that they had was broken down. Which I was like, as a Horde player, I was like, oh my word. But now they're going to have Gorehowl made and everything, which is really, really cool. So, I mean, if NetEase are wanting to do that, it clearly shows that whatever deal the three parties have come together with is going to be very fruitful for all of them. And I think the players are going to be the ones that are really going to benefit from this.
Yeah. It really does feel like kind of Microsoft coming in and saving the day a little bit, which it's great for Blizzard. I think that, you know, the one Blizzard game that was still accessible in China was obviously Diablo Immortal. That was through like a completely different deal or a different agreement or whatever. So that at least was still going. And obviously mobile gaming is huge in the Chinese market. So if they'd lost that one, I think that would have been, shudder to think. But it's great that they are coming back into this. I will say the funniest thing about the orc statue incident was that it was done in response to Blizzard saying that they will find a way to save the Chinese players' like account progress and all of that stuff to like keep it, even though they aren't able to play, they were trying to find a way to like hold on to that stuff for, you know, in case in the future. And apparently like that did not go down well. And so the freaking orc statue was destroyed. It's just hilarious to me. But I'm glad that they rebrokered this deal. I think that for a lot of us, there is so much nostalgia and love attached to Blizzard and Blizzard games. So to just not have those available anymore would be really, really sad. So happy to see that, you know, they can go ahead as they should be. And you know, people have access to these games again, even though the Blizzard games these days have been a little bit iffy, a little bit. we're unsure how we feel about Blizzard games at the moment.
Yeah, but at least, you know, it's happened at a really good time because Cataclysm Classic is coming through in a month and a bit's time. 20th mm-hmm. of May, I believe, is the release date for Cataclysm Classic. So, you know, there's reasons for people to be coming back. You know, retail is gearing up for the War Within expansion.
And the Mr. Pandaria special event. Ooh, exactly. I'm seriously considering getting my sub again just for the Mr. Pandaria event.
My sub just runs for an entire year, and then I worry about it does. In January next year. And then I worry, I've got it for 12 months. But you know what? It's a really good time to play World of Warcraft and get involved. So if, you know, mainland China, super happy for them. You know, World of Warcraft is an amazing game. And, you know, being able to play it whenever you want to is really cool. It must have sucked for like the last year or two for the Chinese players, but super stoked for them now.
seems we don't have a promising playable or a soon-to-be success. And I've also cut out my last piece of news. I normally, you know, we normally have two each. And that is because we really wanted to dedicate some time to the Triple I initiative recap. As you guys will know, when we released our episode on Saturday, we spoke about it. We said that it was coming up. It was happening. And that was one of the reasons that we postponed our recording day from yesterday to today, which is Thursday, the day before we actually released the episode, because I wanted to make sure that I could watch and that I would be able to report back on what I had seen. So Wednesday evening, Evil Empire hosted the Triple I event. And here are some of the top announcements from the show. So we mentioned last week that Evil Empire was working on another new Prince of Persia game, marking the shortest turnover time for the series ever. But it's also a strong deviation from the original games. Evil Empire brought us Dead Cells, and that influence can be seen quite heavily in the new Prince of Persia game. This iteration will be another roguelike Metroidvania, but with a markedly different graphics from the last Metroidvania that we had.
Slay the Spire is finally getting a sequel. It's been a long time for this, and people have been crying for it. So fans have been calling for this for some time, and you'll be pleased to hear that it arrives in early access on Steam in 2025. I just hope it doesn't stay forever in early access.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, a million years to announce the sequel, and then another year to get us into early access, and then hell, we'll leave it in early access for another 15 years, and then one day maybe the game will release. Who knows?
I hope not.
Procedural detective sim Shadows of Doubt has added a brand new sharpshooter assassin update, which is live now. I didn't even know this game existed, but I love the concept, and the art style is dripping with 90s nostalgia.
Always a big fan of some detective sims and detective games. Mm-hmm. Risk of Rain 2's new Devotion update was announced, adding a new stage called Verdant Falls and new artifacts called Devotion and Delusion. The update is coming soon.
There were a few games that were just like, soon TM. All right, guys. Vampire Survivors, but it's Contra. Operation Guns will be releasing on 9 May, introducing a lupine Brad Fang from Contra Hardcore, among other things, to the Vampire Survivors game. So if Contra's your thing, if Vampire Survivors your thing, off you go.
I always dig Contra. Contra was such a good game. Loved it. Thorium has announced Undermine 2, a sequel to their well-regarded action RPG. Another game I'd never seen before, but it looks pretty fun to kill some time and bounce some bombs around.
They play tennis with a bomb, but like as they go back and forth, the bomb gets bigger.
You got me at bombs and tennis, and I could hit them and bounce bombs around. I'm sold. I'm definitely going to be adding it to my watch list.
Everyone, and everyone needs to check out What the Car. If you've heard of like What the Golf or What the Bat, same guys, okay? The demo is on Steam right now. There is an anthropomorphic car that goes through like various shape changes. There's one where he's got like wings, there's one where he's got like legs and high heels. Like it's interesting. And he zooms around with bright colors, basically looking like an extreme acid trip. It looks amazing. I cannot describe it well enough to give it justice. Check it out.
Are you looking for a new medieval kingdom sim? If you are, Norland comes out to early access on the 16th of May. I always enjoy like old school, like build city kind of thing. So medieval, definitely going to be looking at this come 16th of May.
The one. An exciting update for Darkest Dungeons fans. It's getting a new mode called Kingdoms, which is a free standalone campaign set for release later this year.
Roguelike Raven's Watch is getting a big update in Fall of Avalon, bringing with it a new map, new enemies, a boss, hero talents, and a game mode. Release for this is scheduled for the 22nd of April, so around the corner.
Mm-hmm. Tactical RPG The Last Spell is getting a new DLC called Dwarves of Runenburg, which launches on the 24th of April, so also just around the corner.
Brotato is receiving a local co-op and new DLC, Abyssal Terrors, giving a new meaning to the term couch potato.
Okay, guys, Cat Quest. Cat Quest 3. Okay, Cat Pirates. Cartoon cat pirates on a quest. This looks adorable, and I don't know how I've only just found out about it. The opening animation has been revealed, and the game is set to launch sometime in 2024.
You can see Sam is incredibly excited about this for the number of times she mentioned cat.
Cats!
Old World is receiving a new expansion titled Behind the Throne. It's very similar to Civilization, so if that's up your alley, make sure you check it out.
Mickey Mouse FPS. I'm going to let you go watch the trailer for more on that one. When big brands enter the public domain, it is a scary, scary thing.
I don't even know if I want to go and watch that video. I really, really don't. Pal World made a fleeting appearance. It quite literally just flitted across the screen. But the new arena multiplayer is something we can all look forward to this year.
V Rising's Castlevania crossover looks very cool, very on brand, but the graphics seem to have taken a downward turn. I don't know if that was just me, but like as I was watching it, I genuinely thought that it was a new game drawing inspiration from V Rising and not the actual game itself. And then, you know, at the end of the video, it's like V Rising. And I was like, really? So hopefully that gets smoothed out before release, but the content itself looks pretty cool.
Another roguelike to add to the list, 33 Immortals, is a 33-player co-op action game, which will be heading into closed beta on the 24th of May, with early access slated for later this year. That is wild. 33-player?
33 players, man. It's like a WoW raid, but worse. Like, more intense.
So much more to manage.
Sequel to Never Alone, the critically acclaimed atmospheric puzzle platform game, Never Alone 2 invites players to embark on a cooperative journey in an expanded 3D world with an original story by an Inupiat writer, all inclusively developed by with Alaska Native elders, writers, storytellers, and community members. Never Alone was a game I loved years ago. I think I got it for like free on PlayStation 4 like 10 years ago. And it was so good then. So I'm really excited for the sequel.
Another city builder, Lesara Summit Kingdom, takes the genre in a new direction by putting your city on a mountain, bringing with it new and interesting challenges. It's out on early access right now on a mountain. As a person who plays City Skylines and like Sim City, I cannot imagine the kind of challenges that this is going to throw. I really can't.
It's really cool. Like, there's like peaks and stuff, and then you like build bridges between the peaks, and you have to like expand your city that way. Very like different, but very cool looking at any rate. My time at Sandrock is getting cross-platform co-op, which is kind of huge for an indie farming sim. Like, well done, you guys. Cross-platform co-op. Go off. Amazing.
Farming with friends is just always so much better.
True.
We have a lot of games where you get to play as Vikings. Now you can fight against the Vikings and also dinosaurs. Dino Lord makes you a knight with a dino for a steed, and you can now wishlist it on Steam. I like the concept. Vikings and dinosaurs, that's like two really dope genres together.
So much fun. I'm like, you're busy watching the trailer and it's like, ah, yes, the English knights fighting against the Vikings. Fantastic. Why is there a dinosaur? What? it was definitely a moment for me, but very cool. Looks quite sick. And possibly the best announcement and most polished looking game from III was Flintlock: The Siege of Dawn. It's an action RPG with stunning visuals from the little that I got to see, and probably best embodied the concept of an indie game with AAA production. It should be dropping in the next few months and will be available across PC and console platforms, but you can wishlist it now on Steam. So if you haven't seen it, go and check it out. Now, obviously, this list is insanely long, and it wasn't even every game that was announced during the 45-minute show that was put on. So I highly recommend going to watch if you haven't. So many incredible indie devs for you to explore. The III initiative was, however, in my opinion, a little underwhelming. And I remember I said this a couple of months ago about, was it the Sony showcase? There was a showcase a couple of months ago and I said the exact same thing. And there were some awesome announcements and some of the new games look very cool. But overall, it echoed what I felt about a lot of these game announcements over the last year or so, is that I feel like we lack a lot of creativity and there's a lot of like rehashing of the same things over and over again. Like, is originality dead?
I don't necessarily think so. I think it's very much, okay, I'm going to be coming at this from like the very business mindset. There is a formula that is working for the gaming industry. What is selling? It is X, right? So it's a way to guarantee revenue. It's definitely possibly a lot more safer, which is why people are going for it, especially in a time where it's, you know, you see a lot of these studios technology places just, you know, laying off people and stuff just to rising costs and stuff. So I think it's a lot more playing safe than taking a risk than anything else. I don't necessarily think originality is dead. I just think that the things that people want to have and create, it just costs a hell of a lot right now, and people can't necessarily do that. It could also be laziness, but I don't think it's really that one.
Well, I mean, so I saw a post on Facebook the other day, and it was about music, but the concept kind of, it works for what I want to explain. And the post was from a particular punk rocker, like an artist. I didn't catch the name, but he said, like, he was using Green Day as an example. He said Green Day never sold out. Green Day always played their music, and eventually their music became popular. Like, that's just, it just happened to become popular. Like, we got to a time. So I feel like with gaming, sure, when you're all jumping on the bandwagon, it's going to work for a time, but eventually you're going to need to branch out. You're going to need to have to do something different because gamers get bored. If there is anything that I have learned about gamers being one and growing up with them and having them as friends, we get bored, bro. We have the attention span of a freaking fruit fly. There is always a game of the month, right? Like right now it's Helldivers, and just the other day it was Palworld, and just the other day it was like Baldur's Gate. And I mean, to be fair, Baldur's Gate is still really popular, but before that it was Hogwarts Legacy. Like, there is always a game of the month. And if you are constantly trying to catch on the heels of what's popular, you're not going to catch up, and everyone's just going to like speed ahead. So I hear what you're saying, and I agree to an extent, but I like the concept of, we're going to do this now, bring in some revenue, and then we're going to do something amazing. And I hope that we see more of that in the future.
Yeah, I think it's just, I think in terms of like business, it's just a very uneasy time, which is why people maybe are just going for what works and just modifying it. And you know what? I'm not entirely against it. I'm really not. I do like original games, but I mean, there's also, why do I go back to the games that I do, you know, or purchase games that I do? It's because I like what they are and I enjoy them. Even if people only play it for a couple of months, I mean, companies would have made their money from that. There'll be people that will continue, that will still play it and go back to it. And especially if you open up the game to modding and stuff, the community itself is going to help continue to drive the game. Giving you an example, Giant Software, the people behind Farming Sim, right? Farming Sim 2022 was the last game, but it's the modders and things that have been bringing out all these additional mods for the game, different tractors and like just about anything and everything for the game. You know, they're the ones that are bringing the stuff out. So a game that was released back then is still being played by thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people because of the community. So I understand why people feel like maybe it's, you know, oh, it's just the same rehash. I just think it's just the kind of, we say, timeline, or like on the bell curve, or wherever we at, where everything is just like, you know, it is what it is. And once a couple of studios produce something is incredibly original, I think that's when things will change. And I think that that might still be a year or two or three away.
Mm.
And in this week's news nobody cares about, we're talking Microsoft, right?
Again.
Again, Microsoft has been in the news everywhere, right? But Microsoft is working on a RAM limit slider for its Edge browser to prioritize memory-intensive applications and PC games. Right, the intent is very clear that they want their browser to be favored over every other browser. But thanks to one user who spotted this on X, Leo Piva 64, this option is apparently seen in the experimental Edge build. Right now, the full details are available for those that are on like the Windows 11 Insider programs with the releases that they do, which is kind of like the beta test that people get tested and before those updates get rolled out to us. To skip over a lot of the jargon, though, ultimately the slider will allow you to limit how much RAM you want Edge to have access to at any time. But just think about how much RAM Chrome uses with all 27 of your tabs open on that right now. Now, let's limit it to a maximum number of RAM that it can use. Boom, you've just got free RAM, right? Now, you don't need to download extra RAM. You could just like ration out what you have. It's really, really cool. The only problem is it's not really. Edge is the number one browser for downloading a better browser. I just think that I just think that it's great. I actually really do like the concept, like, a lot. It's just a pity that some third party browsers do not have something like this already.
What's hilarious to me is that Edge, in its quest to become relevant, has added in a feature that I feel like it didn't really need, purely because...
Nobody used it.
Well, there you go. But the thing is, Edge is already the least RAM-intensive browser, to the best of my knowledge. So now they're adding in a slider that will allow you to use more RAM when... Do you want to use more RAM? Surely you... I don't know. I suppose it depends on what you're doing, but I just feel like... I don't know. It seems like a totally unnecessary addition.
No, I actually really like this, especially for people that do like content creation, gamers, and things like that, because, you know, let's talk about an example. When you're playing a game, you've probably got something open on a browser that you're busy watching, right?
Yeah,
so... being able to limit, instead of your browser just using like half a gig of RAM, you're going to say, no, at any given time, you can only use like 400 megs or whatever the case is. And all of a sudden, you're going to be freeing up that RAM for performance in your main applications or whatever you may be doing. Now, look, it's not going to come with downsides, right? I mean, if you're going to be limiting your browser to, say, only a gig and it needs 2 gigs, you're going to find yourself in a situation where it is going to lack a little bit of performance. But at the same time, I think that so many people have already got 16, 32, 64 gigs of RAM. Just telling Chrome to not, or Edge in this case, to not use 5 gigs for your tabs, you only want to give them 4 gigs. You're not really going to see that much of a difference in terms of like what your browser's doing. But I think that those little minor gains, those people that are chasing the numbers always, they're going to see big gains on their applications and stuff. And it's a really cool feature, especially for people that have got systems that are, say, a lot more restricted, especially on, say, work desktops and stuff.
I will say, like, chasing the numbers. So, and you're right? Like, you get your like, min-maxer.
Yeah.
Is that, like, an A-type personality? I don't know. Your min-maxer type personality. And sure, they 100%, right? They're overclocking, they're sliding that RAM slider, they're doing all the things. Mm-hmm. But for your average Joe, to put it in context, I quickly like Googled up something which has to do with browsers in 2024. Convenient. Google uses 1,000 megabytes of RAM with 10 tabs open. Oof. Do you know how much Edge uses? 790. Like, I mean, it is less, but is it that much less?
I guess it's what you're doing on those. If you're watching videos, you're going to be consuming more. But I mean, like, already it uses less, but now you're going to be able to say, listen, at no stage do I want you to use more than a gig, because I need the other 7 gigs to do things that I want, which is really cool. It's a really nice addition. It's a pity that other browsers do not have something like this. But look, if there was a way that you wanted to win people over, it's definitely saying, listen, stay away from Chrome or Brave or Firefox. You know, that's using 1.5 gigs or 2 gigs of your RAM because you've got 37 tabs open, of which 20 of them are from Amazon. The other 4 are like YouTube videos that you're going to get to, and Reddit subreddits that you're busy just doom scrolling through. You know, limit those and just use Edge to do all of it.
Or close your tabs.
I didn't want. I'm just trying to get it across to people. I saw somebody that had something like 40 something tabs open. I was like, how do you work? Just close the tab. It's okay. It's saved in your browser history. Like you can come to terms with it. Just freaking close the tabs.
I never have more than 10 at an absolute max. And the only time I have 10 is when I'm like working on a broadcast and I need like stats and stuff from different teams and things, which I could sometimes I collate that into a Google Doc and then I don't even need tabs open. Sometimes I'm not that smart. But I very rarely have that many tabs open. I will say though, if this ends up being a feature that people really enjoy and they like and whatever, the big browsers are going to implement it and Edge will go back to being what it always was.
The number one browser to download a better browser.
Amen.
Well, that about rounds up your news and gaming this week. Thank you so much for tuning in to episode 38 of your Week in Gaming. You can find us on socials at YWIG Podcast and by email at your weekingamingpodcast@gmail.com. I'm Andrew and you can find me at My Name is Pengu.
I'm Sam. You can find me at Nari Mizuki.
Our next episode will be out on Friday, the 19th of April, 2024 at 7 a.m. GMT plus 2 and across all major podcast platforms. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.